A federal appeals court in Chicago yesterday put on hold a federal judge's order earlier this week that ordered a halt to the John Doe investigation into Governor Walker's recall campaign and the destruction of evidence collected. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, May 8th. We are going to try to sort all of this out and welcome your questions and reactions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Donald Downs, professor of political science, law, and journalism at UW-Madison. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. I'm trying to figure this out.
Who isn't?
Let's start with the federal judge, the U.S. District Judge in Milwaukee,
right.
Rudolph Randa, on Tuesday ordered a halt to the John Doe investigation into Governor Walker's recall campaign. What was the problem that he saw?
Right. Well, he saw a problem, really twofold, I think. He saw what he considered the abuse that was associated with the way the John Doe investigation was being conducted. The bright lights, going to the people's houses, ransacking them, and things like that. But more importantly, he saw that the rules that were being applied and the way they were being applied were prohibiting and chilling the incentive of the plaintiffs in this case to engage in issue advocacy about politics and about campaigns, which is sort of at the heart of the First Amendment, which is among the most important thing that the First Amendment protects is political speech.
Mm-hmm.
And the rules that were being applied were rules about coordination between a candidate and advocates of the candidate. And if they're coordinated too much, then it can become a form of contribution. Or if they engage in what's called express advocacy, where they actually use their money to advocate the election or defeat of a particular candidate, then that's also seen as a contribution.
Yeah.
And the Supreme Court has long upheld limits on contributions to individual candidates. If, however, you're engaging in issue advocacy, which is what the judge concluded Club for Growth and other groups involved in the lawsuit were doing, then that's considered expenditures to advocate issues and positions. And there's no limit. The Supreme Court does not allow any limit on that.
Yeah. So in layman's terms, well, John Doe investigators were trying to figure out if these campaign financing laws were being violated. They believed
right.
they were being violated
right.
because there was a coordination,
right.
perhaps, between
right.
the groups and Governor Walker's campaign.
Right. That's it in a nutshell.
Yeah. And so
let me very quickly continue then. So he argued that the ads themselves, well, this is Judge Randa's, that the ads and the comments that were being made by these people were not express advocacy of elect or not elect Walker, but were about issues, and therefore there could not be limitations on them. Well, if indeed, however, there's coordination over such statements, then that could be seen as express advocacy and therefore as a contribution. And he argued that there cannot be coordination when the group that's coordinating with the candidate already agree on the issues. Because if they already agree on the issues, the primary rationale the Supreme Court has come up with for saying you can limit contributions doesn't exist. And that rationale is quid pro quo. I'm going to give you money, so you'll make a decision that normally you wouldn't make because I've given you that money. If the two groups, if the Walker and the other groups are already in sync on the issues, there cannot be quid quo pro contribution because that group was going to do that issue, because Walker was going to do that anyway, regardless of the coordination.
So how often does a federal judge halt an investigation that's being conducted by state prosecutors?
Yeah, it's very unusual, you know, and there are really two unusual things about this. But then again, this is an unusual case because of its significance and because of the tactics of the investigation. It's unusual for that to happen at all. And also, it's somewhat unusual for a federal judge to make the kind of ruling he made on coordination, which sort of goes beyond what the Supreme Court has done. Then again, that his decision is consistent with the trend of Supreme Court decisions over time in this area. So I think it's something the Supreme Court is going to take note of.
Well, and now we have this three-judge panel in Chicago yesterday saying, hold on, Judge Randa's ruling is on hold, or you know, we're staying it. But that's only temporary, too. Judge Randa can decide today if he thinks that's a frivolous ruling?
Yeah, because of the way the law works here and sort of the technicality, given the nature of the appeal, he could not, Judge Randa could not order a stop to the investigation, which is one thing he did. He also said that all the records, they had to be returned to the plaintiffs and all the other records destroyed. And if that happens, if the records are destroyed, then you can't really do a meaningful appeal if you're on the other side. So in order for him to succeed in that, you know, saying that you have to stop the investigation and destroy all the records, you had to show that the appeal was frivolous. And that just means it really has no possibility of succeeding.
But it's just interesting that Judge Randa decides if he thinks it was frivolous.
Yeah, because it's going to, well, yeah, it's not that he's going to say his opinion is frivolous. It's whether or not the appeal is.
Right.
And, you know, my view is somewhat nuanced in this area. I don't think the appeal, you know, I could be wrong on this, and Randa might disagree with me, that the appeal would be frivolous because he does sort of make a kind of new ruling when it comes to whether or not the coordination laws are constitutional. So there is some sort of legal dispute here. But that doesn't mean in the end that the plaintiffs in this case are not going to ultimately prevail if the Supreme Court goes along with Randa's.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it seems, again, to a layperson that it would make sense to try to stop the destruction of records because then it hasn't gone through the entire appeal process.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Yeah. So in any case, where does this go now?
Well, let me just reply to your last comment very quickly before I answer the other question. I'll just answer the question. It will go, if indeed he rules that it's frivolous, that'll be the end of it. And unless there can be an appeal by the Seventh Circuit in Chicago as to that particular ruling. And I don't know the answer to that for sure, but my understanding would be that the Seventh Circuit would be able to consider that as well. But I might be wrong about that.
Well, you did say that the prosecutors in the John Doe are going to have a tough time appealing Judge Randa's ruling. And why did you think they're going to have a tough time appealing it?
I don't think they will, because I don't think the claim by the defendants in the case, you know, the independent prosecutor and the DA in Milwaukee are frivolous, because I think that the Judge Randis raises a constitutional point about coordination that is controversial, and that therefore I don't consider the suit per se frivolous. But I do think there might well, in the end, be merits in Judge Randis's ultimate conclusion about the problem with the coordination laws and how they're being applied.
We are talking with Donald Downs, professor of political science, law, and journalism at UW-Madison, about the issues involved in this John Doe investigation into Governor Walker's recall campaign that was ordered halted by a federal judge in Milwaukee this week. That judge also ordered that all records collected in that John Doe investigation be destroyed. Meanwhile, yesterday, a three-judge panel in Chicago put Judge Randa's ruling on hold. So we are trying to sort this out and talking about what all this means for political free speech in Wisconsin. Welcoming your reactions and questions to 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about the legal rulings into that John Doe investigation and wondering what all this means and welcoming your questions and welcoming your reactions. First, a federal judge ruled earlier this week that Investigators stop the John Doe investigation into Governor Walker's recall campaign. Then a appeals court yesterday put a stop to that judge's ruling. We're wondering where all this will lead and what it means for campaign finance laws and political free speech in Wisconsin. And we're welcoming your questions and we're welcoming your observations. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, we have full lines, so let's go to June in Rice Lake first. Hello, June.
Hello. I am not a Walker supporter, but I am wondering, you know, did the judge state at all? It seems to me, after all these years of investigating, that there should be something, some kind of ruling by now, or some kind of charges, or something coming out of it. Did he state at all that, you know, because of what this is costing the taxpayers to continue to investigate, that's why he's stopping this?
Well, that's a great question. He didn't talk about the expenses. Excuse me. He didn't talk about the expense of the investigation, but the undercurrent of the entire opinion was the way in which the length of it, the duration of it, and the heavy-handed nature of it was having a huge impact on conservative groups' willingness to engage in issue advocacy. And he did provide some evidence of that in the opinion, which means then that, you know, as we move toward the next election season, a major political party and its supporters are finding it much more difficult to engage in political speech. And that is a real problem for a constitutional democracy.
Mm. Thanks, June. Let's go to Nate in Milwaukee. Hello, Nate.
Hi. I actually read part of the judge's opinion who tried to halt the investigation and actually said destroy the evidence, which I understand is an unusual thing to go and say. But what struck me is I think he actually said in the opinion, and I might have to reread this to be sure, but he actually said that people may have found a way to circumvent campaign finance rules. And to me, that struck me as him almost cheering that on, which I find as opening the door or welcoming organized or large-scale corruption, which I find deplorable.
Did he say that, Professor Downs?
The caller is, I think, correct that he really did pose a challenge to rules about coordination. And coordination rules are set up, and the Supreme Court talked about this in a case last year, which Judge Randis relied on in his opinion, that coordination laws are set up to prevent people from doing sort of end runs around the contribution limits, okay? But I think the implication or a possible implication of Randis's decision is that the whole apparatus of coordination regulations in itself can be abused. He didn't just look at the problem of coordination. He looked at the problem of government applying those rules in the complex area of campaign finance and how it ends up repressing political speech. So I think this decision could present an occasion for rethinking the entire rationale of campaign finance regulations, and maybe it would open the door to let's just let anybody contribute anything but ensure full disclosure so everybody knows what's going on. You know, back in the early 20th century, Robert La Follette, who's, you know, a major figure in the progressive movement in the United States and in Wisconsin, is recognized as one of Wisconsin's political heroes. You know, his campaigns were largely financed by a wealthy individual or two. And Eugene McCarthy, the famous Democrat that ran LBJ out of the nomination process in 1968, was financed largely by one or two wealthy people. So as long as there's full disclosure and we trust the politicians, you know, maybe that's a direction that the Supreme Court will take us. So this is opening the door to major reconsideration of the entire apparatus, for better or for worse.
Yeah. So meaning that big money may have a bigger role than it already does in our elections.
Well, it already has a huge role, you know, and you have all these lawyers who dedicate all their time to figuring out ways to get around this stuff. It seems like every major reform we have in campaign finance leads to another way of getting around or another unintended consequences, another set of unintended consequences. So at least this decision makes us look at the government side of it. I tell my students when it comes to campaign finance laws, there are two evils. One is all the money running through the system, which seems to disempower everyday citizens. And I feel that way, too. The other is the Rube Goldberg regulations that the government sets up to try to deal with this. And that can become a form of oppression in its own right, and that's what Judge Randa stressed. And in the middle of all this is the most important right that we have, which is the right of political speech. So how do we reconcile these tensions?
Yeah. But let me clarify again. The judge said that the conservative groups and Governor Walker's campaign found a way to circumvent campaign finance laws, and that's okay.
Well, he didn't. That's not quite what he said, but he did say that he didn't really get into the details about how the coordination took place. So I don't really know the answer to that. But he did say that the coordination rules had an inhibiting effect on what he said was clearly issue advocacy, not express advocacy or contributions to candidates. And therefore, it had a detrimental effect on political speech.
Let's go next to Jonathan in Milwaukee. Hello, Jonathan.
Hi, this is Jonathan Brostoff, and I think there's two incredibly upsetting things about this case. The first is how much ratcheting up there's been in regard to the influence of money in politics, especially in Wisconsin, with out-of-state billionaire interests being able to play a role in our local affairs. The second is how politicized the judicial roles have become and how judges are now it's no longer, I feel, an equal check and balance where there's someone who's completely removed. I feel they're much more, especially in the Wisconsin Supreme Court, but it's much more involved in the day-to-day politics, and it's very upsetting to me, those two trends. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they are both genuine concerns. I guess the problem with money in politics, I mean, it comes from both sides. The Democrats spend more right now than Republicans do. So the question is, can you put the cat back in the bag without suppressing political speech in the country? And that's a really difficult proposition. In terms of politicized judges, I'm not going to judge on this case. I don't know enough about Judge Randa's to say that. His concern in the case was the effect on political speech, which is definitely a constitutional concern. But, politicized judges, it's always been an issue in American constitutional history, but especially, ever since going back to the Judge Bork hearings. And now when we come to nominating Supreme Court justices, everybody's counting the number of liberals and conservatives on the court as if the law has been politicized. And that, to me, is a concern in general. And, Wisconsin Supreme Court, obviously that's been an issue.
Yeah, lots of comments on our Facebook page about this, and a whole bunch of them were about that Judge Randis was a Republican appointee. I think it was George H.W. Bush appointed him.
Right.
And then everybody after the appeals court in Chicago overruled that, or at least put that ruling on hold, said, oh, yeah, of course, it's liberals in Chicago.
Well, one was Frank Easterbrook, who was a Ronald Reagan appointee. I think that two of the three the three-member panel in Chicago, and two of them, I think, are Republican nominees, and the other was a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to be careful on this. I think the real dilemma here is legitimate concerns about money in politics, but on the other hand, the difficulty of coming up with rules that deal with that, that don't become bureaucratic nightmares like Rube Goldberg machines, and that empower government all the more, and which don't inhibit political speech. And we've seen that it's difficult for that latter set of problems not to happen here. So I'm a little bit more libertarian on this than probably a lot of callers will be.
Marty in Elkhorn is with us. Hello, Marty.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. So the Wisconsin judge says, okay, yeah, you can go ahead and destroy all those records. 7-8 hours later, the judge in Illinois says, oh, no, you can't do that. What's to have prevented him from destroying those records in between that 7-8 hours?
I thought of that while you were making your comment. I don't know the answer to that because Randis did not say you have to wait a day or two. So had they destroyed them, there might have been some sort of judicial punishment or something. But I can't answer that, but it's a good question.
Yeah, I It does seem unusual that a judge would say in an active, ongoing investigation, you can destroy all evidence collected, right, and you must destroy all evidence collected right now when it's being in court.
I think, you know, I'm not going to try to psychoanalyze the judge, but I think that he was so outraged by the way this process has worked out. And it does fit into a larger theme, and that is over the last 20, 30 years, the growth in the power of federal prosecutors, which is a major. I teach a course on criminal law and justice, and that's been a constant theme in that course, the number of proliferation of federal laws. When this country was founded, we had 10 federal laws. We now have over 4,500. And a law professor, I think from Tennessee, tried to do a count on them. He couldn't come up. He couldn't finish the count. All right, he gave up. He said, well, I've got 4,500, and I've got to stop. And that doesn't count regulations that often have criminal penalties attached to them. So we have a very heavy-handed federal government now, and we have federal prosecutors that are often more than willing to take advantage of that. It's one reason we have an incarceration crisis in this country. The number of federal prisoners has quadrupled over the last 20 years, 30 years. And this is sort of part and parcel of that. Independent prosecutors have always been a problem. You might recall back in the Reagan era, and then, of course, Ken Starr going against President Clinton. You say, here's a set of individuals, go find a crime.
And I have to jump in because we have news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio coming up next, but then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It is 7:37 on this Thursday, May 8th. We are talking with a UW-Madison professor of political science, law, and journalism about all of the legal decisions regarding the John Doe into Governor Walker's recall campaign. Talking with Donald Downs and welcoming your questions and your reactions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. The John Doe investigation into Governor Walker's recall campaign was stopped by a federal judge in Milwaukee on Tuesday. That judge also ordered the destruction of all evidence collected in that John Doe investigation. But yesterday, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago granted a stay, put the Milwaukee judge's ruling on hold, which means prosecutors do not have to destroy their evidence, and the John Doe case remains technically active. We're talking about what all this means, especially when it comes to campaign finance laws and political free speech in Wisconsin, and welcoming your questions and your reactions. Let's take another caller, Dave in Mount Horeb. Hello, Dave.
Yes, the professor seemed to imply, or maybe actually said, this is a federal investigation. This is not a federal investigation, nor was it a federal prosecution.
That
might, and I underline the word might, end up in some sort of a state prosecution.
Right.
It's interesting. A couple things in the decision that were interesting is, as I'm reading through this, I'm wondering, gee, how does this apply to the unions? Don't they have the right to association, which is also a First Amendment right? Justice Thomas last week or 2 weeks ago said, the First Amendment rights and limitations don't apply to the states in a prayer in front of a meeting. So can't the state, if the 14th Amendment does not does not guarantee the rights against state action, because the federal constitution generally guarantees federal rights, not state rights. Couldn't, if using Judge Thomas's analysis, couldn't the state still prosecute? And then there's a separation of power. This is an amazing decision involving all sorts of currents that go both ways in this.
I apologize. You're right about the investigation. Obviously, it's a state investigation. So I was wrong about that. My general theme about prosecutorial power, especially the federal level, still holds, but this particular instance is state. So thank you. I stand corrected. The second point about the application of the Bill of Rights to the states, the First Amendment and all the Bill of Rights except for a couple of things, like the Third Amendment hasn't been applied to the states yet, and the right to a jury trial in a civil suit of $20 or more is the old figure back from the founding period. Those are the only two parts of the Bill of Rights that do not apply to the states just as much as they do to the federal government. It's been a long process of application. Since 1925, the Supreme Court has step-by-step applied the Bill of Rights to the states just as much as to the federal government. So you're mistaken about the second point. The third point, I don't remember what it was exactly. Perhaps you could refresh my mind.
The second point that I was making
point was about the Bill of Rights in the states.
Right. The second point about the Bill of Rights was Justice Thomas last week,
and the
religious thing was saying that that the Bill of Rights does not apply, which would be to go backwards from where we've been going over the last 100 years.
He's dead wrong about that, and he's an outlier on that issue.
The interesting side is, because the right of association, which is in the First Amendment as well, along with speech and religion.
Right.
How does that affect the unions that all of a sudden state action prohibited them from joining together in forming unions?
Yeah, well, that actually was litigated. The unions did raise a First Amendment freedom of association claim, and the courts decided that there was no right to engage in that kind of collective bargaining at the state level as being part of the First Amendment. So that issue has been litigated, though that claim did arise. Had the courts concluded that there was a freedom of association rights for unions under the First Amendment, then indeed that would have been applied in Wisconsin. But the courts went the other way on that particular case.
Thanks, Dave, for the call. We have David on Facebook who writes, this conversation begs the question of finance reform. We are talking about what Ralph Nader just named yesterday on this program as corporatism. Since Citizens United, funneling money to politicians for their causes, democracy, and public representation has been usurped. Return the political system to the public. End the corporatism that we are seeing in Wisconsin. Donald Downs, do you see a link here between corporatism and the judicial decisions this week?
Well, sure. I mean, it's going to give, if indeed this kind of decision is upheld and Citizens United remains the law, there's going to be more right for corporations to spend money on politics. That also applies to unions and other groups. Corporations tend to be somewhat divided in terms of their positions. It's not like there's one big corporate state. Corporations represent a lot of interests. They're in competition with each other, things like that. So it's a little bit more complicated. And another point we should bear in mind is that as the American government has grown, we have a huge administrative regulatory state now. Just the last year, we passed more federal regulations than at any time in memory. And that means that more and more businesses are affected by what the government does, which means it's only going to be natural in their self-interest to survive. And we all want businesses to survive, right, because we're all concerned about employment, that they have to interact with government because so many government decisions now affect business. If you want to get corporations out of business, one way to do that is to make a smaller government. So it's a complicated question is all I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Well, you told the Wisconsin State Journal that Judge Randa's decision halting the John Doe investigation and ordering the destruction of evidence collected was a very strong opinion. What was so particularly huge about it?
Well, strong in terms of his conclusion, his emphasis on the importance of political speech in the process and how the coordination rules in Wisconsin, his estimation, were inhibiting speech. And he gave some evidence of how it really has hurt the conservative side of speech. And also because his position on coordination, I would say, was rather adventurous. Because last year in the McCutcheon case, which is a case that he relied on, that was a case in which the Supreme Court said that you could still maintain limits on direct contributions to individual politicians, but you could not limit how many of those direct contributions you made in the aggregate. And in making that decision, the court relied on the importance of coordination rules to prevent people from getting, doing an end run around, like we talked about earlier, the limits on contributions. So McCutcheon actually took coordination rules seriously. And now Judge Randa is challenging those rules. So he's sort of stepping out on a limb. And on one hand, that's why I don't think the appeal's frivolous, as I said earlier. But on one hand, he could be struck down by the Supreme Court for that reason if it goes that far, which it very well might. On the other hand, his reasons for doing that are consistent with everything the Supreme Court's been doing the last 10 years. So this case, he could get slapped down, or it could lead the Supreme Court to go even further in the direction that it's been going.
Yeah. Well, I was looking at this the story on the appeals court ruling, the three-judge panel ruling, though,
right,
that says the appeals court decision returns the case to Randa's courtroom, where he
right.
must first rule on whether an emergency appeal filed by the prosecutors is frivolous.
Right.
If he determines it is, the judge can just reissue his original ruling?
Yeah. That appears to be the case. I think it was you or one of the callers asked earlier, well, what happens if he just destroys it? Does he have, I guess you asked me, Joey,
mm-hmm.
does he have the full power just to destroy it, the evidence, and that's the end of the case? Or is there going to be further review? And I don't have an answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's an unusual kind of circumstance that I haven't seen before.
Yeah. Then he says, if Judge Randa finds the appeal has merit,
right,
the stay
right,
will remain right. into effect.
Yeah. Could I raise one other point very quickly?
Yes.
There are two other broader kind of contexts here, and one has been brought up a lot by the callers. You know, the flood of money into politics. I mean, it's really very extensive. Though, of course, if you look at it in terms of our overall GNP, it's not, but still, it's a lot of money, and it disturbs a lot of people for understandable reasons. The other issue here is, especially after Citizens United, which opened the door to even more of that because they allow more corporate and union financing now in elections than they did before. So there's been a huge reaction. We have to try to stop this. And it's fed its way into politics. And it's led to some cases where the government, which is right now at least at the federal level controlled by the Democrats, inhibiting conservative speech. And now I'm talking about the IRS issue at the national level. I see Lois Lerner was just held in contempt of Congress yesterday. Conservatives see this, and in the IRS case, IRS was denying tax-exempt status for 501c4 groups, which are at the heart of the Randa's decision as well, to engage in politics. And it really inhibited their ability to engage in conservative political speech during the last election cycle. And a lot of conservatives are really concerned about that. And this case in Milwaukee is part and parcel of that larger kind of concern, too. So this issue here in Wisconsin has implications nationwide, and it's involved in a larger national kind of dispute over finance and inhibition of speech.
Let's take a break and then take more calls for our guest, Donald Downs, a professor of political science, law, and journalism at UW-Madison, talking with us about the implication of the court rulings this week into the John Doe investigation into Governor Walker's recall campaign. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, talking about a federal judge's ruling on the John Doe investigation into Governor Walker's recall campaign with Donald Downs, professor of political science, law, and journalism at UW-Madison. Let's go next to Marcia in Portage. Hello, Marcia.
Hi. I was calling because I took umbrage at the professor's use of the word Rube Goldberg when it comes to coordination laws. I've worked on campaigns. I've helped friends run for office. And I found that there is no Rube Goldberg issues if you just don't work with other groups. The problem comes when you want to coordinate and you want to get around the rules. But if you're running as a Democrat or if you're running as a Republican or an independent, the issue should be that you're working on your own campaign your own way and that you're not working with other groups. Having been a resident of the Columbia County area and in Portage, during the last couple of years, I can tell you that I've seen coordination in the advertising being done by some of the conservative groups, but I haven't seen that as happening with other groups. So,
right,
so Ruth Goldberg isn't fair, a way of describing the wall that should be in between these different advocacy groups and the candidates.
And there's just there just should be a wall there, Professor Downs. Nothing complicated about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess it depends who you talk to. I mean, I've talked to people on both sides, and I have a friend who ran for Congress in this district several years ago. And, boy, he sure describes it as a Rube Goldberg kind of machine in his case. And the Federal Election Commission really made life difficult for him even after the election. And he did everything he could to, you know, play it by the book. So, but, yeah, I mean, I think you have to look at it case by case. And when I use that term, I'm sort of talking more about the overall kind of apparatus of it, which is something that Judge Randis seemed to premise his decision on as well. So, yeah, I can't comment on what happens up at Portage. But I've seen it has been portrayed that way by other people in other contexts that I know.
Let's go next to Craig in Onalaska. Hello, Craig.
Good morning. The biggest frustration that I have with this ruling is that we the people still don't know whether or not our governor broke the law or his supporters broke the law. And to me, that's the biggest downfall of his ruling.
Oh, well, so we don't know yet what happened. So I guess maybe he's saying how come we're stopping an investigation when we don't know what happened.
Right. Well, I'm not sure what to say about that, but I think that, you know, that was not the judge's purpose, was to find whether or not Walker and his associates broke the law. It had to do with the impact of how these laws are being applied on the political speech of these other people. But those two questions are sort of linked, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. So in essence, Craig and others have a frustration that a federal judge halted an investigation when we don't even, you know, they were trying to investigate potential wrongdoing, and now that has been stopped. And you're saying that the judge's rationale is that the investigation was crossing the line was trying
exactly
to investigate something that really wasn't against the law.
Yeah, that's better put better than I did. Sure.
All right. Well, it's very confusing.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
you know, while we didn't know about the so-called secret investigation, this John Doe,
right,
and all the details as to what was being investigated, now we do know that one of Walker's campaign advisors, R.J. Johnson, was under investigation for allegedly controlling a hub of issue ad groups in 2011 and 2012 in coordination with the Friends of Scott Walker and Wisconsin Club for Growth and others. Wisconsin Club for Growth denies that it was working with the Walker campaign.
Right.
Why don't we talk a little bit about what is this revelation, now that we know this, going to have any effect on Governor Walker during this election year?
It might. You know, I mean, I think most people are not. Is how one conducts the campaign something most people vote over these days? I don't think so. Most voters are sort of already inclined to go where they're going to go based on policy and their commitments. But could it make a difference at the margin? If it's a close election, then that's certainly another kind of question. It was interesting, the previous caller talked about we the people and our right to know, which, of course, is a very good point. Judge Randis's entire opinion was premised on, it begins with talking about we the people and what the First Amendment means and how we need to be able to engage in as much free speech as possible during campaigns without being afraid of being prosecuted. And he said, otherwise, we lose the power of speech ourselves to help determine policy, and more power goes into the hands of government. So there are two different ways of looking at the rights of we the people in this case.
Yeah. Let's go next to Ron in West Bend. Hi, Ron.
Oh, hi, Joy. I really enjoy these false equivalent guests you guys have, like the one you currently have. I really enjoy
what's
the idea. I really enjoyed his idea about saying that Democrats outspent the Republicans in the recall election. If he remembers
the recall election correctly,
Ron, I'm. What if? Please ask whatever your question is.
The recall laws allow the incumbent to raise unlimited funds. So Walker outspent Barrett.
Oh, I know he did. Of course he did. I didn't say that. I wasn't talking about the Walker re-election campaign.
No, you're just
talking about
nationwide. You're just killing time.
Well, Ron, listen. Just ask what your question is and make your point, not necessarily attack our guest. Well, where do we go from here, Professor Downs? What, now that we have a three-judge panel that stayed Judge Randa's order to halt the investigation and destroy the evidence, where do we stand now? What happens next?
I would like to see what Judge Randa's does. The issue right now is whether or not the appeal by the defendants is frivolous. And I don't know what he's going to decide. Given his opinion, it seemed to me that he might so conclude, but I personally think that I don't think the appeal is frivolous.
Right. You don't think it's frivolous, but if Judge Randa says, yeah, if Judge Randa says it's frivolous, then the John Doe is halted and the evidence is destroyed.
That appears to be the case, but I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess what is your takeaway from this whole ordeal this week?
Right. Boy, I have a lot of takeaways. And it shows, first of all, how emotional the issue is.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows how we've got a real tension between partisan politics and First Amendment principles that cut in from all directions. And I think that this issue is the issue of campaign finance is an issue that's in the process of being negotiated. And we're in the middle of sort of a movement toward a position that we hope we can live with. But I don't think anyone's ever going to be satisfied in this area.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Okay, thank you.
Donald Downs, Professor of Political Science, Law, and Journalism at UW-Madison. Thanks to Bill Martins, to Cynthia Schuster, and to Robin Cherry for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. Coming up tomorrow at this time, we are going to talk with the author of Social Insecurity, 401ks and the Retirement Crisis, about why he says 401ks have gutted retirement security. That's tomorrow at this time. Coming up in our next hour, we are going to talk about what's called physical intelligence. Our guest psychologist will say when you're warm and cozy, you are more open to new ideas. She'll discuss this and other physical sensations and how they affect our everyday lives and actually affect how we think. That's coming up in our next hour. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.